What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Down to the Wire, and you made it. We've all made it to our SEC West preview. It's August 1st as we're recording this. About what, a month away from college football starting, Mason?
Months of the
camps
day.
Everywhere is starting up. Man, finally, dude. It feels like it's been forever since January.
Well, it's been forever for me since I didn't watch any spring football. You, on the other hand, I'm sure you're still a little...
I watched like two games, all right? Calm down.
too many, Cam.
Literally, after we talked about that, I don't think I watched a single game after that.
See, bullying works.
Yeah, hey, we made it, man. We're going to do our SEC West preview. Next week, we'll be doing our SEC East preview. So just give everybody a roadmap on what's coming up on the podcast. And then after that, we'll start going national. And I'm sure we'll probably talk some playoff and Heisman stuff a little bit more in depth then. But yeah, next couple weeks, strictly SEC, because, you know, that's what we're in. We're both now in Alabama. You are no longer in Florida.
Yeah.
We're back in Alabama.
Back where there's actually a fall. It's going to be nice.
Yeah, back where, you know, yeah. I mean, it'll be nice whenever it finally gets here. this 97-degree weather, Mason, I'm not about it.
Yeah, this ain't nothing. I was forged in a Florida heat. This feels like a nice summer's day for me.
Whatever. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so listen, we have the SEC West preview that's coming up, our two favorite teams we're going to be previewing, but we're going to do a little something different. But before we get into the preview, Mason, we really haven't been able to talk a ton about what just happened, last week. And it's the topic that everybody is talking about now. And I'm honestly kind of tired of it. I think a lot of other people are tired of it. I'm sure you're tired of hearing about it and want it to stop. But that's conference realignment. So last week, right? On the news that Colorado is leaving the Pac-12 and going back to the Big 12. For those that live under a rock or just don't know kind of the landscape of how college football shifted, the last big conference realignment time when it came to Nebraska leaving the Big 12 and Missouri and A&M leaving the Big 12, Colorado was also one of those original teams to leave the Big 12 way back when and went to the Pac-12. And lo and behold, it was like 10, 15 years later, they are going back to the Big 12 and leaving the Pac-12 and coming back home. And so that's sparked a lot of conversations. And a lot of this has to do with the Pac-12 being unable to figure out their media deal rights on what's going to happen, because the Big 12 jumped the gun last year and hopped on the ESPN deal for stability. So, Mason, you're a big Deion guy, right? Colorado is one of your teams now. I don't know if you bought a jersey yet, but I'm sure you will. What do you think about the move for Colorado leaving the Pac-12 and getting back into the Big 12?
Yeah, look, I like it for Colorado just based on the fact that the Pac-12 is dying at this point. So I think it was nice for them to be able to get out while they still could, because honestly, I don't really know quite what's going to happen on the field this year. I know that, like you said, Deion's my guy, and I trust that he's going to actually put something together. But this year it might be a little shaky, so I think they were kind of at their peak right now for being able to kind of jump to a different conference and actually make it worth it. When it relates to the Pac-12, man, like, gosh, dude, they're sinking, and they're sinking fast. Like, right now you only have Oregon and Washington left, and honestly, it's only a matter of time before both of them probably to the Big Ten too. So I just feel for the Pac-12 and some of the teams that they've been rumored to be interested in to join the Pac-12. Not looking great.
Yeah, it really is a sad time when you think about the regionality of college sports is one of the reasons why we love it, right? You know, you have your West Coast teams in the Pac, you had your Northeast teams in the Big Ten, then you had kind of your coastal type teams in the ACC, your heart of the South in the SEC, and then you had your Midwest teams or Western, you know, Middle America teams in the Big 12. That is now gone with the Pac-12 basically dissolving. from teams getting picked off from other conferences. And again, it all gets tied into your media rights deal. They decided to try and do some new age stuff, and seeing that, you know, cord cutting is a thing and subscriptions, and they thought that, you know, we'll try and change it and be different and try and get on the front end of things. And hey, maybe we'll try the streaming thing. Let's not hop on a deal fast. And because of that, USC and UCLA get picked off by the Big Ten. And then Colorado gets picked off by the Big 12. And from the news that's happening right now, as of this moment, there has been a tentative deal that's actually been finally presented, at least to the university presidents in the Pac-12, of a deal with Apple. And yes, you heard me right, person that is listening. We are talking about that Apple, on having the Pac-12 games on Apple Plus or whatever it's called, Apple TV. Does anybody think that actually is going to work? Who in their right mind? And listen, part of this is because I don't also live in the West Coast, but I know some people that live out there, none of which are big sports people, which, no, not everybody is, but how many people on the West Coast are so much dying for college football that they're going to make sure they have Apple TV to do it, to watch these teams, especially USC, UCLA. So you lose the LA market, which is huge. What big markets do you have? You lose Denver and Boulder with Colorado leaving. What big markets do you have left? You don't really have one. Maybe no. Seattle with Washington. Maybe
Utah, but not really.
And we're about to get to them, but I don't see it happening. I don't think it's a good move, but that's what they got because they thought they could reinvent the wheel. At the same time, there has now been reports that Arizona State and Utah are going to try and stay together as a package deal, whether that's staying in the Pac-12 or the Big 12 is now legitimately targeting these three schools. The Arizona Board of Trustees that is in charge of both Arizona and Arizona State already met today after the announcement. So I would probably expect to hear some news on those three schools possibly jumping ship and going to the Big 12 as well. Would not surprise me with this news, because the deal, at least with the little information that's really out there about this deal with Apple, is just at the forefront, it's less money than what the Big 12 and ACC make, with the potential of maybe getting in that same range, maybe more, depending on if these schools are able to drive up the streaming memberships of Apple TV, which doubt it would happen. Add on top of that Apple will not be doing the production of these games. So you already have to take out a cut of each of that money to then use towards your production costs for each team. So really not a great deal. And so I would expect it to implode, like you said. I would expect Arizona State, and Utah to go to the Big 12, and I would expect Oregon and Washington to go to the Big 10, and all the other schools that are left over, Cal, Stanford, Washington State. Oregon State is maybe in a weird kind of predicament, but the others, they're probably going to like Mountain West or something like that. So
yeah, it's not looking great for them, especially all the media days were this past week or 2 weeks, whatever it was. And the commissioner of the Pac-12 came out while he was doing his big media availability and said that he didn't believe that Colorado was leaving. He thought everything was all good. And then a week later, Colorado jumps ship. You can't tell me that the commissioner of the Pac-12 doesn't know when a team's about to jump ship, because A, you're either sitting there lying while you do know and lying that they're not leaving, or you're incompetent about the fact that they are leaving and you're just kind of trying to save your own butt. So I just I hate that kind of the whole realignment thing, especially like you were saying about certain places and everything like that. Like, it's just going to feel kind of weird, but at the same time, like, it's the Pac-12, man. They have been kind of incompetent for a while.
Yeah. It's really sad. It really is, because, and here's kind of, I think obviously, like, Colorado, when it comes to the whole playoff discussion, doesn't move the needle at all because they've been irrelevant for 15, 20 years at this point. But I think that them leaving and it further, I guess the word I'm looking for is cementing the end of a Power Five, at the time Power Five conference. I think, at least to me, and this is probably going to be more getting into a playoff discussion and playoff expansion discussion, but I think that it's going to be, I think it just really kind of opens your eyes more to what all of this conference realignment really means for the playoff.
I was about to say, that's my problem with it, is now that you're giving out these guaranteed bids into the playoffs, you're telling me that the champion of the Pac-12, which will probably be, what, Oregon State, if all the other three teams leave? Like, you're telling me Oregon State deserves an automatic bid into the playoffs at that point?
Well, yeah, I mean, we can even go a step further, because you get six auto-qualifying conference champions. And I think you and I both agreed that maybe was a little much. We both agree that we also think that the playoffs should have been at 8 and not 12. Yep. 12 is a little much. So with that, I mean, you're talking that in Colorado in the Big 12 isn't in like a couple years. Like, a lot of times these conference realignment moves are like, hey, we're announcing it now, it's happening in like 2 or 3 or 4 years from now. No, this is happening next year for Colorado. Colorado is out of the Pac-12 starting next year. They're in the Big 12 again. And I would also assume that the other moves that are going to happen from the Pac-12, which would include Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, maybe throw in one or two other teams going to the Big 12, whatever happens to Washington and Oregon State and all these other teams are probably going to happen next year, if I had to guess, or maybe in 2 years in 2025. Where the playoff format is, you get six automatic qualifying teams from any conference. And so we're going to go ahead and we're removing the Pac-12 basically from that. And we're going to replace it with your four conferences of the Big Ten, the Big 12, the SEC, ACC. And now you got two more. You're going to add one from the ACC or AAC, the American League, and then the Mountain West or Sun Belt or the MAC. I mean, like, what are we like? That's kind of the issue you run into with all of this conference realignment, and then also guaranteeing these automatic qualifying bids to six conference champions, and maybe one of those just goes to Notre Dame. Maybe I don't know how that really works. I'd have to look at it again.
Do you remember if they
count towards one of those or not? But.
Do you remember what the agreement was with the playoff committee? Like, because I know, so for the SEC, they just signed basically like they signed all their stuff up to 2024 for the 8 games and 9 game stuff. So, like, what is their agreement with the playoff committee for the 12 team playoff? Like, are they coming back in 2 years and then?
That's a great question, Mason. And I was actually about to go there. And I'm glad you brought it up. So when it comes to the playoff as it stands now is only for the 2024-2025 seasons.
Okay.
That's when the contract for the college football playoff ends, the TV contract, and how that all goes. And then 2026 would be when the new contract, which they haven't negotiated yet, haven't really talked about yet, would go into effect. And part of that is the formatting of the playoff, how many teams, how is it going to work? But that also is going to include the TV stuff for the playoff too, because currently it's just handled by ESPN. And you know it, because ESPN constantly, anytime they talk about college football, it's always about the playoff. It's always about the playoff. It's always like, listen, one of the things that makes college football great is the regular season, okay? I don't need you tweeting out a month before the season talking about college football playoff odds. I don't need to hear it. Like, let's worry about week one and week two, where we have great games like LSU, Florida State, and Florida and Utah on a Thursday night, and then Alabama and Texas in week two. Like, we have great out-of-conference matchups. Let's, like, focus all of our talk on that, and let's hold any of our playoff talk until, like, November. Okay, yeah. I think that'll help a lot. So that's part of the reason I think you see a ton of talk with ESPN is because they want to keep that contract, so they're trying to keep their people happy. So with that, the current format of the playoff with the 12 teams, 6 auto qualifiers, and 6 at-large bids, that can easily change to whatever they want it to be starting 2026. And so we'll probably hear news on what that's going to look like, I would guess, probably before the 25 season at the latest. We might hear something next offseason on that. But with all this realignment stuff, like, there's no way that the Big Ten and the SEC, just those two conferences, are going to agree to, oh, yeah, we're okay with giving 4 auto qualifying bids, staying at 12, having 4 auto qualifying bids to these other conferences, and we only get, you know, 1 each. Yeah. There's no way that they're going to be okay with that. So my opinion, it's totally going to change. What it's going to change to, that remains to be seen. Hopefully it doesn't go up. I mean, most of the time when you're talking about this stuff, it never goes down. Here's the hoping it does. I want it to go down to 8. I think that's the either 6 or 8, I think, is the money area. And I would hope that all here's my hope, Mason. And we might agree on this. And if we don't, then I want you to give what your hope is for what a playoff would look like starting in 2026. My hope is we go to 8. Your top 4. Your conference champions, your highest rated conference champions that make the playoff, all get automatic home playoff games. They're played at campuses. We're not playing the first games at bowls. That's stupid. And so, oh, you're in the SEC and you won your conference. You're automatically a home team. You're an at-large in the SEC. Well, it depends on what everybody else does. You could still host, but maybe not. We're not going to give auto qualifyings. But hey, if you're the highest rated team and you also win your conference, you get a home game. I think because it's either we guarantee home games in the playoff for conference champions if we're keeping conference championship games, or we just get rid of conference championship games altogether. And I think you and I both agree that's not going to happen because it makes these conferences way too much money.
Yeah, no chance.
And for TV deals. No chance. I hope we go to 8, and I hope there's some way. I don't want to say, hey, the top 4 conference champions get home games, which is kind of what I'm saying. I think I'm more saying you have more of an option or more of a chance to get it than if you, I don't know. I just think there needs to be some sort of reward for winning your conference championship game. And I think that kind of helps with the competitive balance, but I want it to go to 8, and it definitely doesn't need to be any more. If we're going to give auto qualifying bids, it can't be any more than 4. Top 4, top whatever. But I want it at 8, yeah, starting in 2026.
And we've definitely been in agreement with that it should have been at 8. And that's kind of what I'm worried about, is the fact that they jumped all the way from 4 to 12. Because like you said, there's no way they're going backwards with it. So like, I just kind of think their sweet spot's going to be 12. I think they'll be at 12 for a while. And I hope they don't go up to 16, but it would not surprise me at some point if they jump to 16. Because it's the same thing every year. When it was a BCS, you always had 1 and 2, 3 was left out, and they were always crying about it. When it was a 14 playoff, you had 5 and 6. They were always crying about it because they were left out. When it's going to be at 12, 13 is going to be crying about it because they're going to be left out. And at some point, they're just going to expand, just probably to make more money. But I don't know. I agree with you. It should have been at 8. But we're at 12, so I just – and like you said, they're going to have to renegotiate this whole thing, because if you're giving out 6 automatic bids to – and you're giving one of them to the Pac-12, and Pac-12 is going to be hot garbage at that point, it's not going to work.
Well, at that point, the Pac-12 isn't even probably going to exist by 2025, by the last year of the current format, yeah. I don't think, with how things are going. And if they are, they're like a 5-team conference, or they just basically become the Mountain West because they just try and poach like San Diego State and Boise State and all these teams that don't actually belong in what used to be called a Power 5 conference. But yeah, I mean, 12 is my max that I'm okay with when it comes to a playoff.
Yeah, definitely.
If they go any more than that, I'm joining the Josh Pate train. Shout out, Late Kick Josh. Love you. there will be no more, like, I will be fighting against going up to 16. It's too many. Everybody has a line. Some people's line was, hey, no playoff at all. Some people's line was 14. And then my line is 12 team. That's where it is.
I think,
and
if we go anymore,
you're really diluting it a lot.
I think if it ever gets to 16, it's going to be because we're entering this mega conference stage of college football. Like you see the Big Ten's growing like crazy. SEC has always been growing like crazy. Like, it seems like if we're going to be at 16, there's just going to be a point where it's going to be like Big Ten and Big 12 kind of merge together, and SEC and ACC kind of merge together. And then you have like these two power conferences, which is going to be very NFL like, which I'm not a fan of.
Yeah. Yep. And unfortunately for us, the people that make those decisions don't give a crap about fans, don't give a actual crap about what college football is actually about. And so they're just thinking about money. And think this is the way to do it, when in reality, they are doing everything possible to ruin the sport. Listen, I was completely okay. You and I are completely okay with the playoff expanding. We will not deny that, and we will embrace that. The problem is that we have all these issues that are arising during this time of transfer portal, basically creating unlimited free agency with NIL, with open tampering, because nobody can do anything about it, with these NIL deals. Listen, the NIL, I'm fine with it. Let's just get rid of the, you can transfer at any point and play. Okay, that'll fix that issue. But we're not going to talk about that. Nobody talks about it. That's what should happen, though. You get a waiver if your coach leaves. It's pretty cut and dry. Why are we making this complicated? Because the argument from people is, oh, well, coaches leave all the time. You can't, so we're not going to allow college kids to leave, but coaches can leave all the time. Well, first off, college coaches have buyouts in their contracts that their new employer has to pay to get them to leave. But we can make it super simple. Your coach leaves, and I'm pretty sure it was kind of close to this or getting close to this, you get a free waiver. You can transfer if your coach leaves. It's pretty cut and dry. Everything else, hey, you transfer, you have to sit a year out. I think that'll fix that issue that a lot of people are complaining about. The other thing is, we're having all this conference realignment at the same time of changing the playoff. And we talked about this, I think, last podcast or maybe a couple of podcasts ago. But I think you and I are both excited about Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC because all the matchups and everything, like, that's cool. But for me, imagining a world to where we leave how the conferences have been for the past 10 years and then have a 12-team playoff, I think that would have been fine. Because you got USC, UCLA, which are really building up as programs in these next couple of years, the past couple of years and now with Chip Kelly and Lincoln Riley. You have Oregon with Dan Lanning building up. Washington going to be a real player. Utah's always been strong. That's getting a pretty strong Pac-12 conference, right? It'll be pretty strong this year for the last year that it's ever going to exist. What a way to go out with how it's going to be. You have the Big 12 with Oklahoma and Texas, and TCU just went to the national championship last year, and a Baylor with Dave Aranda, and, you know, Iowa State will have a year there with Matt Campbell, and all those teams is real solid. You got your SEC, which we all know about. You have your ACC with Florida State seemingly being on the rise now, being a dark horse for the playoff. Miami is building up. Next year is probably going to be their year. You still got Clemson. Wake Forest had a year. North Carolina with Mac Brown will always be something. Maybe Louisville gets back to prominence. Like, that's good. And then you have your Big Ten, Ohio State, Michigan. You got your Penn State. You got Iowa. You got Nebraska that might be coming back with Matt Rhule. You got Wisconsin with Luke Fickell. Like, if we leaved it like it was, I think it would be perfect. Be great. But we're making it worse now because we're doing this conference realignment thing that is now going to start diluting the product more. And I think that's what disappoints me more. It's like, hey, we've been calling for an expansion of the playoff. We finally get it because we know what the rules are. And then we're changing the rules right on the spot of what we thought we were getting. And now we're not getting what we thought we were getting. Like, they're pulling the rug out from under us, Mason. And I don't like it.
That reminds me to ask you, did you see the news earlier this week that Tua's younger brother got offered $1.5 million to transfer to an SEC school?
I did see that. Yeah.
All right. Who do you think it was? You had to guess. I think it was Auburn.
Auburn.
Yeah, I was about to say it had to be Auburn.
It was either Auburn or maybe Florida.
I was thinking Florida too. And then I also thought about Kentucky because they got Devin Leary. But at the same time, I don't think Kentucky's coughing up $1.5 million for a quarterback.
Not in football.
Yeah, no.
Maybe for a point guard or
maybe,
something.
Maybe a point guard, basketball. But not a quarterback.
Yeah. Man. But yeah, man, it's just – can we just like stop the madness, please?
Yeah.
Like, that's all I'm asking for. I mean, we're obviously probably going to get more news before the season starts. Unfortunately, it's just going to be another nail in the coffin for the Pac-12. And so these people better get busy and make the playoff 8 games starting in 2026. Otherwise, I don't know what it's going to look like.
So who's next? Do you think it's going to be Oregon and Washington, or is it going to be Utah and the two Arizonas?
I know Oregon and Washington were in talks with the Big Ten before the USC-UCLA deal went through. And so I'm kind of surprised that they haven't already gotten a deal with the Big Ten, honestly. Now, whether that's because they've been wanting to hold off or if that's because now the Big Ten isn't worried about them because they have USC-UCLA. And so if I'm them, and if that's the case, then I'm like, no, please take us.
Yeah.
Like, we'll take less money. Just please take us. Get us out of here.
Well, I think that's the question with it right now is because the Big Ten, I guess, did they ever sign their new media deal? I don't know if it ever actually happened.
I don't know. I haven't really looked through it.
I think that's the hesitation because I'm assuming that they did, and then you're having to go back and renegotiate with CBS to get two more teams added in for a bigger slice of the pie. So, I don't know. But like I said,
I think we're more likely to hear Arizona State, Utah leaving to go to the Big 12 before Washington and Oregon go anywhere. That would be my guess because there's been so much movement since Colorado's left. They're already talking about the Big 12 now is super courting those two teams.
I mean,
or three teams.
The Big 12's getting a little interesting at this point, if we're being honest.
They're head killers, man. Dude, it's so funny because I sent you this tweet or this thread or something that I found that like, yeah, the Big 12 like suggested doing a merge with the Pac-12 like a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And the Pac-12 being who they are, thinking that they're too good for everybody, declined it and said no. And now a year later, the Big 12 is about to like put the death nail in the Pac-12. Like, man, just think how far we've come. You have turned this conference down on doing a merger that probably would have been in your best interest, and now they are about to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
But, okay, assuming they do get Utah, they're going to be a little sneaky at that point because it'll be what? I mean, you'll have TCU, Oklahoma State, Cincinnati, Utah, and – I don't know. It's going to be a sneaky conference. Oh, and that's where UCF went too, isn't it? Yep. It's going to be sneaky.
It'll be interesting for sure. All right, we spent 30 minutes on this, Mason, and we have a lot more to do here when it comes to this podcast. Let's go ahead and move on. We'll probably talk about this more because I would imagine there's probably going to be more news about this next week when we get together to do the East preview. But let's go ahead and start with the West. And we're doing it. I don't know if we did it this way last year or not. I think we actually both kind of touched on each team as we went through. But here's how the format's going to go. Each of us has a team. I split them up. It's an odd conference on odd division. So I'm doing 4 this week. You're doing 3. And then you'll be doing 4 next week, and I'll be doing 3. And, you know, both of our teams are rival teams. We're in the same division.
No.
And so what I also thought would be fun is instead of us doing our own teams, we're having the other do each other's teams. I think this is a little bit more fun. So I will be starting it off with Mason's beloved Alabama Crimson Tide. So we'll go ahead and get into the preview now. And all I have to say about them is that they're horrible and they don't win anything.
Oh, come on. Don't do that to me. Let me hear the praise.
Hear the praise. Okay, so I kind of streamed outlined a little bit, so hopefully maybe we'll get through it a little bit quicker and then we can have some further discussions about each team after. So we'll try and do our own little previews on each team at the start, and then any kind of questions that we have for each other on these teams, we'll try to leave that at the end. That way we can get through these pretty quick and then have a longer discussion afterwards. So, and then we'll end the podcast with order of finish and all that kind of stuff. So start off Alabama here. They have a pretty decent schedule. They play Texas, the two teams they lost to. They play at home, so that's also a big plus for them. I kind of broke them down, tried to break each team down into these kind of sections of strengths, weaknesses, question marks, and then kind of prediction that includes the toss-up game. So I'll get more into the schedule for each team at the end for me. And so I'm going to start off with the strengths. So strengths for Alabama, for me, looking into them, I think the obvious two obvious strengths for them, running back and defensive back. I think those are two obvious strengths for this Alabama team. Yes, they lost Jahmyr Gibbs last year, super stud. If you don't have him on your fantasy roster or you're about to draft for your fantasy team, I highly suggest probably getting him. I don't, but you should, because he's that much of a stud and he's playing for Detroit, which is going to pass him the ball all the time. But running back, I think, is obvious. They have a stable, it's not going to be one guy at Bama. And it, honestly, most of the time has never really been that way. You kind of have your random years where, you know, Mark Ingram won the Heisman, but he also had Trent Richardson, right? You had Trent Richardson, but then you also had Eddie Lacy. You had Derrick Henry was really the one year where it was, this is Derrick Henry's team. But other, like most other years, I mean, you had your Josh Jacobs, but then you had your Damian Harris's, and then, you know, last year was Jace McClendon, right? But you also had Jahmyr Gibbs, obviously. This year is no different. I mean, you still have Jace. You have, you know, probably 2-3, maybe even 4 deep at running back. So I think that's going to be a strength. And I think the offense is also going to play to that this year because of what I'm going to get to in the weaknesses and question marks. So I think that's an obvious strength for them on the offensive side. On the defensive side, I think the strength is defensive back of the defense. Or you could go both. You could go defensive back or edge rusher. Edge rusher is ridiculously stacked with talent for the past like 2 or 3 years. What they have stacked up are all 5-star players. one of Alabaster's own, Jeremiah Alexander, is on that team from Thompson. So you got Dallas Turner returning. That's a big deal. You lose Will Anderson. That's a big hit. So we'll kind of see. I for me personally, though, I lean more DB. I think Cooley McKinstry is great. And then you had Malachi Moore. And then I think you have like a stud safety or nickel guy that's going to be...
He's a freshman.
He's going to be a freshman All-American. Yeah. I mean, before I've even watched him play, that's what he's going to be. I've heard the links of, what's his face?
Minka.
Plays for the Ravens. Fitzpatrick. Oh. I've heard him be linked to, or kind of... Yeah, so... Those are my two strengths for the Bama team. Weakness, I think, is pretty obvious in its quarterback.
Yeah.
Because you don't have a starter and you just took a transfer that you don't even know is going to start. It's an obvious weakness. And everything else is kind of mid-tier to question mark for me. I'll kind of get into the question marks now when it comes to specific position groups. First is going to be offensive line. Offensive line is being pumped up a lot by a lot of people. I came close to adding it as a strength to me. If they're not a strength to me, at least at this point, they're just a step below on strength, leaning towards strength, but they're still, to me, not a strength yet. I want to see, will they actually live up to that hype? And part of that is, you look at them last year, when it came to the big games, they didn't take over like an Alabama team usually has. They weren't able to run the ball when they needed to. And Bryce didn't always have the clean pocket. Part of that is because you had the young players and some injuries. Until you show that, and that's going to be the case for me for any team, until you show that you can actually do that, I'm not going to put it as a strength for you. You have the talent. They're probably too deep at a lot of places, but you're going to have like at least a freshman tackle, I think, from what I heard. You're going to have some new tackles. Your strength is going to be in the middle, but you know, part of it's going to be injury-wise. We'll see how it goes. Will they live up to the hype? I'm kind of leaning towards yes, but to me, it's still kind of a wait and see question mark for me. The receiver group, I think that's a huge question mark because Alabama has for probably what, like 5, 4 or 5 years in a row had always had at least two banger wide receivers that could basically pick apart anybody. Didn't matter who was playing quarterback. You didn't have that at all last year. You had the best quarterback in the country, and you could have been 7-5 because your wide receivers weren't great.
Yeah.
When we thought that they were going to be. Will they step up? You have like 3 or 4 freshmen from last year that need to step up. Jahmyr Gibbs is gone. Treshawn Holden's gone. Cam Latu's gone. Those are 3 of your top 5 pass catchers. They're gone from last year. So you have Ja'Cory Brooks and Jermaine Burton are your 2 top returning pass catchers. And then you got Kobe Prentice, which I think will probably have a better year. You know, he's a sophomore rising up, but they got to step up, man, because they were super, super inconsistent last year. And it also doesn't help now that you have a quarterback situation where you don't know who's going to be throwing you the ball yet. And it's a scary situation because the quarterback and receiver groups are really going to are super dependent on one another, which gets into the next point of who's playing quarterback, Mason.
Oh.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. You have 3 guys. It sounds like it's more of a 2 quarterback race when you talk to people. But you got 3 guys because one of them didn't transfer whenever what's-his-face transferred in. So who's going to play quarterback? And how good are they actually going to be? You got a new coordinator on both sides of the ball. Kevin Steele, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt because he's done it at Auburn. But still, it's a new guy. He's coming in, coaching a new defense or coaching new guys. What is that going to look like? On the offensive side, you have Tommy Rees. Is he ready for this stage? I don't know. He wasn't great at Notre Dame, and now he's coming into a situation where you have wide receivers that are unproven, and you have a quarterback that you don't even know who you're going to play, so you're going to take the guy that you coached last year that didn't even play great at Notre Dame. So those are huge question marks on the offensive side, really on the side of the ball. If there's any question mark on the defense, it's going to be inside linebacker and interior defensive line, because – the run defense was good at times, but it just wasn't consistent. I mean, LSU ran all over the Tide last year in the fourth quarter, and that never happens to Alabama, or hasn't happened in a long time since Nick Saban's been there. That's a big question mark there, too. So can they beef that up? How are they going to play on the road? That's another question mark. That's been the storyline for this team for the past couple of years is, man, they – play pretty decent at home, but they struggle on the road and get away with stuff on the road. The good thing for them is that the schedule helps them a bit when it comes to these road games. You get LSU and Tennessee at home. You get Texas at home. So those were your 3 big games last year that you went 1-2 in. Your road games this year, you go to South Florida. Why? I don't know. That doesn't make any sense. But you go to South Florida. You go to Mississippi State, which never is easy. You're going to be covering Mississippi State later on. They go to A&M, which A&M has been giving them fits, even though they were horrible last year. They still give you fits. So, I mean, that's a road game that you lost 2 years ago. You get Kentucky rotating on. So you go to Lexington, which is kind of weird. And then you have the freaking juju magic crap at Auburn with a new coach in Hugh Freeze. So you never know what's going to happen in that freaking game. So big question mark. How are they going to be against, going to be on the road? That's always a big question mark for me, especially with depending on how your quarterback play is. So those are my questions on what could happen with Alabama. Getting to prediction, this is where I'm going to kind of break down the toss-up games and then what I think their record is going to be. Toss-up games for me, I think, are pretty obvious. Toss-up game is going to be Texas. Game 2 of the season, obvious toss-up game. At A&M, because it's on the road. LSU and Tennessee, I think, are pretty obvious. And then I also add it at Auburn because it's a rivalry game, and you never know what's going to happen in Jordan-Hare. Those are your, 5 toss-up games to me for Alabama. This season, could you add in one for maybe Ole Miss? Maybe it's at home though. I think you'll be okay. I think you'll be okay on the road in Lexington. So those are the 5 that I think you need to watch out for. My prediction for this season is 10-2. I got Alabama going 10-2, same record as last year. It goes on the under for the win total on the sports betting market, with losses to Texas and losses to LSU are my 2 losses for Alabama.
Wow.
So that's what I got.
2 home losses.
two home losses this year. Can't storm the field if we leave, if we lose at home, Mason. Don't have to worry about field storming if we lose at home.
All right, so I wanted to go back to the offensive line. I think the off, like you said, it's a little bit of a question mark right now. I can agree with that, but I think honestly by like week two, it's going to end up being a strength. I think the freshman, Caden Proctor, is going to end up starting at left tackle, and I think he's going to end up being an absolute menace. And from everything that I've read and heard about what's been going on so far in the offseason and what J.C. Latham has been talking about at SEC Media Day, like, I'm just insanely excited to actually kind of, like, get back to what the old school Alabama style was, where it was just like, we're shoving it down your throat and you can't do anything about it. You know it's coming, but you're not going to be able to do anything about it. And so it seems like that's kind of where they're kind of getting back to. And leading into that, I think that they'll end up starting Jalen Milroe as quarterback. But honestly, it's not going to surprise
me. Hot take.
I was about to say.
Hot take, dude. No one's even talking about this kid, Mason.
So I think Milroe's going to get the nod for the start of the season, but it's not going to surprise me one bit if Ty Simpson's who's finishing the season. I think they'll give Milroe the nod because he's a lot better on the ground right now than Ty Simpson is. And if they're kind of wanting to be that ground and pound team, to me, it leans Jalen Milroe. But I think he turns the ball over too much, and I know that that's one thing that that Nick Saban absolutely despises. So I think by the end of the season, or honestly, probably by week two or three, it'll probably be Ty Simpson. But I do think Milroe starts the season.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally get the offensive line. And, I mean, if you've listened or looked at any kind of Media Day stuff, you keep hearing the term, oh, Alabama's getting back to bully ball. Yeah. Getting back to bully ball. I'm so tired of that saying, hey, why haven't you been doing bully ball previously?
It's because of Bill O'Brien. I blame him for everything.
I mean, is it maybe because you hadn't had the players to play bully ball because you tried to play something else?
Yeah.
And now because you lose Bryce, you're having to go back to that. Man, bully ball works if you have a defense that can stop anybody and everybody a la Georgia. And Alabama hasn't had that in 7 years. Maybe it could happen this year. And it could for probably most teams, but when you get to your top tier teams like your Tennessee, your Texas, your LSUs, and then the randomness that could happen at Auburn, we'll see. And we're going to know a lot about this team in week two because they play Texas and they host Texas. So we'll find out a lot. So that's my preview on Alabama. So we're going to kick it back over to Mason now, and you get to go with LSU.
Is this where I'm supposed to tell you that LSU sucks? Is that how we're doing this?
I mean,
if that's
all you got.
Okay, then. Cool. All right. So I like what you did, strength, weaknesses, and questions. So I'm going to kind of piggyback off of that. To me, the biggest strength right now for LSU is actually, surprisingly, their quarterback. Jaden Daniels had a really good season last year, but he was a little shaky. But I think he's going to improve on it and kind of have a really good year this year. He's getting some Heisman buzz for some reason. He's probably the best quarterback in the SEC right now. So to me, he kind of was going back and forth. Like, he had probably about two or three really bad games, and those were the games that LSU got beat in. Like, you can argue that Florida State, he kind of struggled. Tennessee, oh gosh.
Don't remind me.
Texas A&M.
I was in the stadium for that one.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Texas A&M when he wasn't great, and then Arkansas, I think it was, he was terrible also. I mean that's your three losses right there. So I think he's gonna have to pick that up off of his game for LSU to be able to improve this year. So my second strength for LSU this year is actually gonna be, I'm gonna say, pass catchers, not wide receivers, pass catchers, because I want to link in Mason Taylor with that also, because I think he's going to actually end up breaking out this year. He came on kind of strong at the end of the year. I know he had the 2-point conversion against Alabama to kind of to seal the win, unfortunately. but yeah, I think he's going to end up breaking out this year. And you already have Malik Nabers. That dude is awesome. My guess is that Jaden Daniels ends up actually force feeding both of them the ball this year. If you can have somebody else kind of come on strong, Brian Thomas, Maybe you have a freshman come in, whatever. It'll be interesting to see. I think LSU's offense is actually going to be pretty decent this year. I know the offensive line is what it is. Your running backs are really good this year. You got Noah Kane back. And then and John Emery still there.
Yeah, he is actually. he's getting cleared to play, actually. I'm surprised.
So we'll see what happens with that. When you look on the defense, look, all I have to say is Harold Perkins. And it's whatever. There's a strength right there. but I think the thing that I definitely want to mention when it comes to strength is something that I'm sure a lot of casuals have kind of forgot about, and that's Mason Smith. He was highly talented coming into last year. He tore his ACL first game of the season against Florida State, missed a whole year. They had a lot of high hopes for him last year, and honestly, like coming into this year, they're still there. So I think he's going to end up – it might take him like a game or two to kind of get his feet wet because I know after tearing your ACL, it doesn't just come naturally. But I think he's going to end up having a really good year. And when you have two guys like that and Mason Smith and Harold Perkins, man, like you're solid up the middle. And I think I've heard rumors that Perkins is switching to middle linebacker. Maybe you can confirm that because he was playing outside last year. So you have those two guys up the middle, man. That's going to be really, really tough. With that being said, I will say that a weakness for them is probably going to be secondary. It was a little shaky last year, and I know you brought in, I want to say as a freshman, and a couple transfer portal guys. So if they can kind of hit this year and improve off of what happened last year, then the defense might be kicking as a total unit. But I will say that I think secondary is kind of the weakest part. Also, you're replacing BJ Ojulari, if I'm not mistaken, on the outside. And with that, switching Perkins to the middle, you're kind of going to have a bit of a void on the outside. So it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of pick that up. And like offensively, like I said, I think probably the offensive line is the biggest question mark for the offense. My thing with LSU this year is, can you build off of what you built last year? Last year being Brian Kelly's first year, you went in the West, you go into the SEC championship. Can you still come back and dominate like you were starting to at the end of the year last year? I think everybody was insanely impressed with what Brian Kelly could actually do with actual athletes on his football team. And he came back, he had another good recruiting year. So can you build off of that? Like everybody is starting to crown them. I think it feels like as the top of the West right now and kind of dethroning Alabama. I want to see it one more year. Once you start building that in a consistent basis, like that's when you start taking off. That's kind of the problem that I had with Coach O is like he was lightning in a bottle. He would have one good year and then it would be like a garbage year two years in a row. You'd have another good year and then it was there on out. So I'm interested to see if Brian Kelly can build off of that, which honestly, I think he can. I think Brian Kelly's a really good coach. Honestly, maybe I would probably say he's third best coach, not in the SEC, in the entire nation. I would put him behind Nick and Kirby. So you have him. I have him third. I don't know where you would have him.
I mean, that's about where I'd have him. He doesn't have a national championship yet, so
yeah,
you can't jump Nick or Kirby right now.
Yeah. So looking at the schedule, you have a huge game week one against Florida State. Can you get your revenge? I think you can. Florida State is kind of overrated to me right now, so I think LSU will definitely be able to handle that. You have Mississippi State on the road. I'm going to be talking about Mississippi State here in a little bit. So I'll kind of get more into that in a minute. But, I mean, honestly, other than that, Bama's on the road. You got Florida at home, A&M at home, Auburn at home, and then Arkansas at home. I see one loss.
The schedule sets up real nice this year.
So with that,
we don't play Tennessee.
Going to get you back. One loss.
11-1. Okay. And we're probably going to have more responses to each other's team than all these other teams.
But, yeah.
we'll talk a little bit more about each team after we get through it, but just kind of my quick thoughts. You're talking offensive line. I think you and I are on the same camp on the opposite sides here. I think offensive line for LSU, I wouldn't call it a strength. I don't know if it's a weakness. I would say probably the weaker group is running back to me. I mean, you have bodies, but none of them are like that. Like game break. I mean, John Emery could be that, but he's just been so inconsistent on if he's playing, if he's going to be eligible, if he's not going to be eligible. And because he didn't play in spring, I mean, you don't know what he's going to look like when he comes in. So that's kind of the bigger question mark for me. When it comes to offensive line, we started two true freshman tackles last year. They're both back. We lost one player. So we're out of our six offensive linemen that played a lot last year, we're returning five of them. So there's a good bit of continuity there. Weakest spot on the offensive line is going to be center. He's our weakest link. So we get that short up, we'll be okay. I think the offense, like you said, is going to be really, really good this year. I also believe Jaden Daniels is going to take another step forward, especially in the passing game with his connection with Malik Nabers. And like you said, we need somebody opposite Malik to take off the double coverage and to throw to somebody else. And I think that's going to be Brian Thomas. I think he's there. But a lot of the coaches, the other name that I would look out for this year of another wide receiver that everybody is super high on in the program is Kyren Lacy. Watch out for Kyren Lacy this year. So, yeah, 11-1 is your prediction. So let's move on to the Arkansas Razorbacks. This is an interesting case here, and I don't know how much you'll agree with it, but Arkansas almost always has one of the hardest schedules in the country because they schedule these weird out of conference games like BYU. They have BYU's return visit. They come to Fayetteville this year. Going to the strengths, I think they have two obvious strengths. That's KJ Jefferson and Rocket Sanders. Those are the two strengths on the team. That's it. they are really good players. Rocket Sanders, I think, is the most underrated running back in the entire country. I think he's going to be one of the top running backs picked in the draft this year, assuming he doesn't get hurt. And KJ Jefferson is just a really solid college quarterback. We'll see how he does. And I'll get into the coordinator stuff in my questions, but we'll see how he does in a new system as Kendall Briles is at TCU now. So we had to replace that. But those are my two strengths for Arkansas. Are those two specific players. I wouldn't say position groups. Those two players are the strength of this team. The weaknesses, wide receiver. They lost all of their wideouts. They have maybe one that's coming back that really didn't do anything, and then they have transfers. And their wideouts weren't even that great last year to begin with. So that is a huge question mark. And if you don't have wide receivers, I don't care how good KJ and Rocket Sanders are, you're not going to be able to run the ball effectively if you do not have any threats on the outside. That's an obvious one. And then weakness, now finally getting to the defensive side, they have a huge weakness on the defensive front seven. So not just linebackers and not just the defensive line, it's all of them. They lose Drew Sanders, which is all world basically for them. Bumper Pool, they lose him finally as well. They lose a lot of any of their production that they had on the defensive front when it came to tackles or pressures, they lost, whether to the transfer portal or by graduation. And last year, they super struggled defending the run. They were horribly defensively last year. I'm not going to say their whole defense is a weakness because I think their defensive backs are pretty solid, all things considered. I just think because their defensive front was so bad at the run that they were just put in horrible circumstances last year where it was basically impossible to play secondary for this defense last year. So I think if there is a strength on the defense, it's a secondary, but if that front seven can't create pressure and can't stop the run, it doesn't matter how good you are in the back end. And so that's a huge weakness for Arkansas is that defensive front seven, because they can't stop anybody running the football, which then screws over your secondary. Question marks, and I was just talking about that, can they stop the run and pressure the QB? If they cannot do either one of those, they will have a horrible year. They didn't do great at rushing the passer last year. They only have one guy in Landon Jackson, I believe, that has any experience, and his pressure rate was not very good. Everything else is transfers. Some of them are transfers from like Missouri that didn't even play last year for Missouri. And so that's a huge, can they either stop the run or pressure the quarterback? That's a big question mark. will they be able to pass the ball? You don't have wide receivers that anybody knows. These are all new guys. Are you even going to be able to be a threat? You weren't last year. Treylon Burks wasn't on the team last year. So how are you going to pass the ball last year? How are you going to pass the ball this year? KJ isn't the greatest passer. He's gotten better, but he's still not great. And then you add in the fact that he doesn't have pass catchers that have experience. It's another red flag. Will the offensive line stay healthy? They had some injuries last year. Whenever they were fully healthy, they were really solid. They were one of the strengths of the team, but the injury bug hit them a good bit. So can they stay healthy? If they can, they're okay. Their starting line is pretty good. But if there's an injury, then the dam is going to crack and it's going to come through. So they got to stay healthy on the offensive line. Is Sam Pittman coaching for his job this year?
Ooh.
That's a question mark I have. Is he coaching for his job? I mean, he had a really good season 2 years ago, and then it wasn't that great last year. How's it going to go this year? And the reason I bring that up is because my question mark, and my last question is, how good are these coordinators? You bring in Dan Enos, and then some guy that was a safeties coach, and then you're doing a co-defensive coordinator type thing. I don't know, man. I mean, Dan Enos came from Maryland, where they didn't have the greatest offense in the Big Ten. And you're going to come and replace Kendall Briles, which I think was the best thing you had going for you at Arkansas. I mean, this is where you're going to have to trust. Is Sam Pittman a good coach? And this is what's going to – if both sides of the ball are bad, I mean, you can't get any worse than what you were on defense last year. So I don't think there's a huge step that you can't really take a big step back in that sense. So there's not a huge expectations there, but you got to be at least a little better. And then offensively, I mean, they were consistently inconsistent last year in offense. So what are you going to get this year with Dan Enos, especially with you not having the weapons that you really need to have a really good offense? So how good are these coordinators? And depending on how they do is going to answer the question I had before is Sam coaching for his job? I would lean towards yes, and that's getting into the schedule here.
Oh my God.
Toss up games. BYU is obviously a toss up game. You never know what's going to happen. They have the neutral site against A&M. They play Mississippi State at home. They go onto the road at Florida. They have Auburn and Missouri at home. All of those to me are toss up games. Don't know. It's a 50-50 shot. That does not include games that I think they'll win. They're obviously going to win at Western Carolina week one. They're going to win Kent State week two. They're going to win Florida International the week before the last week of the season. Those are for sure wins. They have three for sure losses. They have three to me. At LSU, at Ole Miss, at Alabama. Three road games. I think they lose. I think all of those are for sure losses for this team. All three. Helps that they're all three on the road. So with all that, I have them going 5-7 this year. 5-7 this year, and their losses are at LSU, Texas A&M, at Ole Miss, at Alabama, at Florida. They lose to Auburn, and they lose to Missouri.
Oh.
So that means out of their toss-up games, out of their six toss-up games, I have them going 2-4 with wins against BYU and wins against Mississippi State, both of those at home. I have them losing all the rest, 5-7.
My only prediction, I think they'll lose more than two games this year. I'm not going to lock that one in.
Yeah, you were pretty high on this team last year, Mason. High on the Razorbacks last year.
I'm not locking that one in. No, I'm good.
All right, let's move on to the next team, Mason. So next, what we got is your other favorite team, Mason, back-to-back favorites. You get the Auburn Tigers.
This one's a little bit easier than LSU, if I'm being honest with you. So I think Auburn has three strengths this year. Strength number one, Jarquez Hunter. Great running back. Got to give him his props. Strength number two, their stadium. Solid stadium. Strength number three.
Which is only a strength, not even for all of their games.
Yeah. Strength number three, the fact that they have Hugh Freeze instead of Brian Harsin now. That's about it. They don't have much else. I'm looking at their depth chart, and right now they have 12 transfers starting over the 22 positions for offense and defense. Insanity. Honestly, like, you know, you have a bit of a quarterback battle out there. Peyton Thorne came in from Michigan State. I'm assuming he gets a nod over Robbie Ashford. Who knows? Honestly, like, it's not about this year for Auburn, if we're being completely real with each other. It's not about this year. The only thing that they need to do this year is not completely crap the bed. If they can stay afloat, if Hugh Freeze shows that he's got them going in the right direction, specifically for recruiting, I think it's going to be a huge win for them. I'm feeling Hugh Freeze. I've been in on what he's been doing. He just flipped a five-star wide receiver from Alabama to Auburn. He flipped, I think it was another five-star linebacker from Georgia to Auburn. So he's been doing his thing recruiting, man. And this is one of the things coming in that people were excited about because Brian Harsin was not doing it. He wasn't recruiting at all. So Hugh Freeze has come in. He's actually shot some life into Auburn, which I think has been huge for them. But to me, like, he got left with a crapshoot. Like, they have no talent on this team. So if he can come in and actually pull a couple games out of his butt, which I think he's going to be able to. I don't think it's going to be a total crap fest this year. I just think that, like, you can't really expect much with him. Like, you have to kind of take your losses as they come. Hopefully you can kind of squeeze out a couple of games here and there. But I honestly, like, from the outside looking in, I'm not expecting a ton out of them this year. Like, to me, this is a building year to get to another recruiting class out of Hugh Freeze to get him to where he feels like they need to be. It's just not going to be this year, unfortunately. Yeah, that's about all I have. So I'll pull up their schedule.
they have a rough schedule.
They do, definitely. It's really rough schedule. So you're starting off, you're going UMass, California. That's 2-0. Should be 2-0. Then you're going Samford, 3-0. Then this is where it starts getting a little tricky. You go to Texas A&M. I think that's a huge game for both of them, honestly, because if that's one of the kind of question mark games, if you're Auburn, if you can pull that out, start off 4-0, you're feeling great about yourself, then you can kind of build off of that. Also, if you're turning around and you're looking at Texas A&M, that's a huge game for them, man. If you're losing that one, feel sorry for Jimbo. but then after that, you're playing at Georgia. You're playing Georgia at home. That's a loss. You're playing at LSU. That's a loss. Another questionable one, you're playing Ole Miss at home. If this was at Ole Miss, I would not be worried about it. I'd be saying Ole Miss is going to win. But the fact that this is at Jordan-Hare, like you said earlier, that place is a voodoo-infested nightmare. With that one being at home, it's a little bit more questionable. And then you turn around, you play Mississippi State at home also. I think if you can pull off one of those two wins, it'll be a good solid stretch for them. And then after that, you go at Vandy. That's a win. You're at Arkansas, another questionable one. And then you have New Mexico State. That's a win. And then Alabama. It's going to be a loss. So total, I completely lost count. 1, 2, 3, 4. I would probably give them 6 wins this year. New Mexico State, Vandy, Samford, Cal, UMass. And then I think they pull one of the three of Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M off. And then lose the rest.
Yeah, it's a rough schedule because – Georgia and Alabama, and this is the last year for division, so this is obviously going to change moving forward. But how it's been, they've had Alabama and Georgia both kind of connected to each other, where either they're both on the road or they're both at home, which, if I'm an Auburn fan, I hate.
Oh, yeah.
Because it makes the rest of your schedule on the years you get them at home super difficult, because that means you go to A&M, you go to LSU, you go to Arkansas, you do get Ole Miss at home, but, you know, those three being on the road every single time that you get the fortune of having Bama and Georgia at home is really rough. I mean, there's a lot of sneaky stuff about Auburn being really good this year. I mean, it has to do with Hugh Freeze, and I totally get it. I think he's an awesome coach, and I think he's going to have him rolling. Obviously, recruiting wise, he's getting him rolling. They're a sneaky team. The thing that just doesn't work out for them this year, it is the schedule.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that hurts them is the schedule more so than anything to me for this season. So you did take a little shot at old Jimbo there. So let's talk about old Jimbo. And I actually found a good bit of interesting information here that I'll get to when we get to the question marks that I think you'll find hilarious because I did whenever I read it. But yeah, let's go ahead and get to Texas A&M. They have a solid schedule as well. They get to have Tennessee rotate on their schedule as the rotational East opponent, which I just love. And it's not a home game against Tennessee. They get to go to Knoxville. So that'll be even better. But they start off with New Mexico. Then they go on the road for the return trip against Miami this year, which Miami is in a very similar position as A&M is in this year. So that'll be real interesting to see where each program is at in week two. Then they come back home for UL Monroe, which Mason is still scared of, and then Auburn. And then they have that neutral site game against Arkansas, and then this is where a huge gauntlet for them happens. They play Alabama at home, then they go to Knoxville to play Tennessee, then they play South Carolina at home, then they go back on the road and play Ole Miss. Then they play Mississippi State and Abilene Christian at home, and then they finish off the year at LSU. It's just a huge, like the schedule from October 7th to mid November is just killer for them, and a huge stretch where they're going road home, it seems. So that's the schedule for them. Strengths for them, I have two strengths. It's wide receiver. I think it's a huge strength. They get Anaya Smith back from injury. They have Moose Muhammad. And then they have one other guy that I cannot think of the name of right now, but he's also a stud. wide receiver is a huge strength for them, really good players. And then the other strength is their secondary. They have some really solid transfers coming in, but then they also have Damari Richardson coming back for his senior season. So that's a strength for them. A weakness for them is going to be linebacker. They lost a lot of their production and have players that have never played, and linebacker in front seven wasn't a great strength for them last year. So it's going to be a weakness for them this year with having even less production and transfers out. That's going to be a weakness for me, for them. Question marks. How is the Jimbo Petrino relationship going to work? I think that's everybody's question, and I don't think anybody's going to know the answer to that until they get to Miami and really until they play Arkansas. How is that relationship going to work? Is Petrino calling all the plays? Does Jimbo really trust him? Is there going to be any blowups on the sideline? Because they're both hot-blooded guys that will get at each other when things start going wrong. How is that relationship going to work? Will the offensive and defensive lines improve? That was a weakness. Both of those were kind of weaknesses for him last year. Offensive line was a huge weakness, giving up tons of sacks, which I called last year. If you remember listening to our preview of the SEC last year, when I actually, this is one of the few things I predicted right, was A&M having a bad year. I didn't think they'd have that bad of a year, but I was not understanding the hype that they got last year. And one of the reasons was because their offensive line was going to struggle, and it struggled a lot. So they have to improve. Defensive line has to improve too. They have to be able to stop the run. They have to be able to pressure the quarterback. They have some solid guys that were freshmen that are now sophomores. So you expect that jump to happen in year two for them, but it hasn't happened yet. So will they improve there? How is the depth? I think something that's really lost that people aren't really paying attention to, they lost 25 scholarship players this past transfer window. 25. I mean, that's like basically when a coaching change happens. That was LSU last year. They lost 25 players in the transfer portal. Tying into that, and here's some of the interesting things that I wanted to point out to you. And these were some articles that I found from The Athletic. Texas A&M had to play so many freshmen in key roles last season, in large part because of the annual attrition that has occurred with Fisher's recruiting classes. Two-thirds of the signees, so that's 51 out of 77, from his first three classes, from 18 to 20, either transferred, medically retired, or did not finish their football at A&M. 51 out of 77.
Oh, gosh.
And Fisher's first four classes, which included 99 signees and two transfers, 60 players either transferred or didn't finish the eligibility for various reasons. So here's the breakdown year by year of how the A&M signing classes have turned out. In 2019, they signed or had a transfer of 24 players. Out of those 24 players, only four of them finished at A&M. They have two of them still on their 2023 spring roster, but they had 18 of those 24 did not and is not finishing their career at A&M. 2018. 2019, they signed 27 high school players, didn't bring in a transfer. 27, Mason. Four of those finished at A&M. Five are on still on their spring roster. So that brings another 18 that did not finish at A&M.
Oh my gosh, dude.
2020, they brought in 26. Only three of those, and with this first one, we're getting into juniors players, so it's not going to be a ton here, but three have finished out of the 26. They have only eight still on their roster in 2023 spring practice, which means 15 have transferred or have not or will not finish their eligibility at A&M. 2021, they brought in 23 signees and one transfer. Only one has finished at A&M, which no big deal. It's 2021. Only 14 of those 23, or 22 at this point, are on their spring roster, which means nine have already transferred out or have retired. And then 2022, it looks like they signed 30. Two transfers as well, so 32 players of those 32. They have 25 still on their spring roster, but already seven have transferred out. So that means out of their 133 players from 2018 to 2022, only 12 have finished school, their eligibility at A&M. 54 of those are on their spring roster, which means 67 of 33 have already transferred or retired.
Gosh, dude. Jimbo, what are you doing?
The 2023 class includes 19 signees and three transfers. One of those transfers is a former UTEP wide receiver who isn't even on the roster. And then let's get to, okay, you know, they have these players. What about development, right? You know, that kind of matters in a program, right? Kenyon Green, which was their offensive guard last year, is the only Aggie drafted before the third round since 2019. Since then, 13 A&M players have been selected, two fewer than Kentucky. Northwestern had more players taken in the 2023 NFL draft than A&M. I think that's everything you really like, all those numbers. And I get you're listening on podcasts and that can be really kind of hard to keep track of, but you know, you and I have been hammering on Jimbo for the past couple of years now. And like, it's stuff like this is the reason why. You want to know why A&M has never taken the jump. You want to know why they had such a poor year. And it's, you aren't retaining your players that you sign and you're not developing that talent. The fact that they haven't had a player drafted in the first three rounds since 2019 is a huge problem. That's four drafts where you've only had one player drafted in the first three rounds.
Gosh.
I mean, it's unreal. And like, it doesn't bode well for the tenure. I mean, they hired Jimbo with this massive contract thinking that this is going to bring stability. They're going to win a championship. And it has been anything but stable.
He's going to get fired. No way he makes it through the season. I don't believe it.
No. So now we're going to get to prediction time here. So we got your toss-up games. and we'll have the discussion on if this saves Jimbo's job or not whenever we finish the rest of the team. So let's not start it now. But toss up games. We'll leave that here at the end, Mason. I know you want to get on it now, but hold the line. Toss up games for me for them is at Miami, obviously. Auburn, the neutral side against Arkansas. Alabama, I put as a toss up game, just because of the past couple year history. That's the only reason. They went 4-8, 5-7 last year and came a play away from beating Bama. So that's the reason. South Carolina is a toss up game, and at Ole Miss. To me, the four sure losses are at Tennessee and at LSU because they're on the road. I guess.
Well, hold on. Why is an LSU a toss up game? Didn't they beat LSU last year?
It's on the road. It's on the road. The difference is LSU is on the road and Bama is at home. Okay. If LSU was a home game for an A&M and Bama was road, I'd swap it. Okay. Full transparency here. I would. The only reason I don't is because they are on the road and in Baton Rouge. And so with that, I have them going 7-5, Mason. I have them going 7-5 with losses to Auburn. I think they lose to Auburn.
Wow.
I think they lose to Bama. They lose to Tennessee. They lose to South Carolina. And they lose to LSU. And so with that, just keep that in mind, I have them losing 3 in a row. I could have it 4 in a row with Ole Miss because Ole Miss is on the road. I spared them a 6-6. But it could very easily go 6-6 with them losing to Ole Miss to finish off that stretch. But I have them going 7-5 with those losses.
Fired.
So, Mason, we'll keep going. So we'll have that conversation here in a minute. We'll go ahead and for your last team preview you're doing is an interesting one, and I'm glad I'm not doing it because I don't know what to do about it. But you have Mississippi State.
I was a little disappointed when you gave me this because I didn't want to do it either, but I'll take it.
Hey, that's the benefits for me doing the outlining and the show planning and stuff. So I get to give you the ones I don't want to do.
So when I pulled up their roster and everything and got started trying to plan it out, I was actually really surprised at how, experienced they are throughout their entire roster. So honestly, like I kind of feel for them this year because like this could have been their year, but you're coming off of like losing Mike Leach the way that you did. You have a brand new head coach in Zach Arnett. You have two completely new coordinators. And honestly, like, it's just a really tough situation. Like, Mike Leach is a tough guy to replace, especially, like, his personality. But then when you bring in his offense, like, it's just a tough job to come into if you're Zach Arnett. So I'll say this. The strengths for the team for me right now, quarterback, I think Will Rogers is awesome. Offensive line, honestly, like, I don't even think there's a junior on the offensive line. I just think they're all seniors and grad transfers. Like, I don't even know how that is possible anymore in college football nowadays. Wide receivers are going to be a little bit shaky this year, in my opinion. You lose Ra-Ra Davis. He transferred to Georgia, if I'm not mistaken. Running backs are going to be all right. But like I said, like everybody, it's just nothing but seniors and juniors on the offense. And then you go to the defense, it's the same thing. It's nothing but seniors and juniors. Like, they have the experience to be a really great team this year. It's just the fact that you lose your head coach the way that you lost your head coach. You now have a first-year head coach, two new coordinators. Like, I to me, that's going to be a tough thing to build off of. But I think if anybody can do it, it's a team that's as experienced as you are as Mississippi State this year. One of the question marks I do actually have for them this year, so like I said earlier, I think Will Rogers is a great quarterback, but some of the rumblings around him is that he was a product of the system because they did run the air raid, and that's all that Coach Leach ran, and that's why Gardner Minshew was able to put up insane numbers. That's why Will Rogers was putting up great numbers the past couple of years. So when you're coming back and you're having a more balanced attack, which I think they're going to kind of try and get back to, what does that do to Will Rogers? Will he still be able to put up good numbers? Will they be able to win games with that? Who knows? I don't know. So that'll be interesting to me, just to see how they can come back down to earth from the air raid to the just kind of like a more balanced system. It's kind of hard to question anything on their defense just because they're so experienced. I will say, I think they're going to be a little shaky in the secondary because I don't remember the guy's name.
Emmanuel Forbes
lost him last year. So when you lose a guy like that, obviously you're going to have to be able to plug and play a couple guys. So can they figure that out? Who knows? I haven't been following them super well in recruiting, so I don't know if they're going to be able to plug and play guys. But when you have the experience that Mississippi State does this year, like, you should be able to make some magic happen. If they can get over, like, to me, the big thing is it's just such a hard way to lose your head coach, especially a guy who was as loved as Mike Leach. So that alone is going to be a tough thing to get over. So to me, like, I think if Coach Leach was coaching this year for Mississippi State, I would have them probably top three in the SEC West. But he's not there, so it's just like a toss-up. Like, I think you could tell me they could finish last in the West. You could tell me they could finish third in the West, and I would believe anything that you're going to tell me. So pulling up their schedule, you have Southeast Louisiana. I'm going to assume that's going to be a W. Arizona at home, W. You have LSU at home. I'm assuming that's going to be an L. And then you have a tough one, South Carolina on the road. So my best guess would be probably a loss there too. I think South Carolina is going to end up having a good season this year. And then you have Alabama at home, which I think will be an L. So just there alone, you're starting off 3-3 with three straight losses. Then you have Western Michigan. That'll be a
3-2. Or 2-3, I mean.
Yeah. Good math.
Start 2-3.
Sorry, I'm dyslexic. I can't count.
You're about to be 3-3, though, so it's okay.
Yeah. All right. Western Michigan, 3-3. So then this is when you really start getting into your question mark games. You have Arkansas on the road. I think Mississippi State could possibly pull that out. Then you have Auburn on the road. I honestly, now the more that I'm looking at that, I'm starting to lean more towards Auburn in that one just because it's at home. So right there, you're
4-4.
4-4. and then you have Kentucky at home. I think you win that one. You have Texas.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I'm not as in on Kentucky this year as most people are. Like, I know Devin Leary is a solid quarterback, but I don't know. I'm not in on Kentucky. So what are we at? 4-5 now? No,
five and four. Yep.
5-4. Then you have Texas A&M on the road. I think you'll lose that one. 5-5. Then you have Southern Miss, 6-5. And then Ole Miss. Man. That was a long pause.
yep. You're thinking about it.
Yeah, I am. Actually, I think I'm going to lean Ole Miss on that one this year. So, 6-6. Yikes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you with Mississippi State. They're the team that's impossible to figure out preseason.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit more about the whole situation there in a minute. So, Mason's got them 6-6 here. And so, that means the last team we have is the old Lane Train. Ole Miss, they have a hard schedule this year. They play Mercer to open up, and then they play your third favorite team this year at Tulane. Then they play Georgia Tech, and then they go on the road to Bama, and here's where their hard stretch comes. They go to Bama, they host LSU and Arkansas back-to-back, and then they go on the road to Auburn. And they have a little bit of a break and play Vanderbilt, and then another gauntlet back to back. They play A&M at home, and then their rotation on from the East is Georgia this year. How rough can that be? Where you get Alabama and Georgia on the road, it's like you're Auburn or something. And then they play UL Monroe, RIP Mason, and then finish at Mississippi State. So pretty rough schedule. pretty rough schedule there. Strengths, Quinshon Judkins, obvious. Best running back or second best running back in the country, I think. He is unbelievable. The way that he just took over that job from Zach Evans last year and just ran away with it, played super well. Helps that he plays for Lane Kiffin. And then just, I'm going to say quarterback room for them because they have Spencer Sanders that transferred in from Oklahoma State, who's fighting for the starting job against
Jackson Dart.
Jackson Dart. Thank you. So that's a super, so whichever guy wins is going to be good. And then you have a solid backup in case something happens. So their quarterback room is a huge strength for them. Weaknesses for them, both going to be on the defensive side of the ball. It's going to be their linebacker and their D line, which is very similar to Arkansas. Both weak spots on their defense last year. They have to be able to stop the run and affect the passer. Question marks. Can the secondary improve? And I think this is very similar to how Arkansas is. I just think they have a better offense. But can the secondary improve? I think they can. I think Lane has brought in some solid pieces in the secondary to help with that this year. And we'll see how that goes. Will the transfers at wide receiver make an impact? They brought in a good bit of wide receivers and lost some solid players at the wide receiver position last year that had been staples for them the past couple of years. They bring in some transfers. So they're going to need to make an impact to open up the running game. They are fairly similar to Arkansas in their strengths and weaknesses, because I think they were also very similar to Arkansas last year and how the team actually played. So I think they're mirror images of each other. I just think Ole Miss is a much better version on the strengths. And a little bit better on the weaknesses than Arkansas is. So this was pretty quick. It's the Lane train, so I think it's pretty straight up of what you get there. The prediction for me, your toss-up games are at Auburn, at Tulane is a toss-up because of how solid Tulane is. And it's weird you're going to Tulane. I just don't understand these weird road games that you have.
Yeah, the green wave.
At Mississippi State is a toss-up. At Georgia is a toss-up, and Texas A&M is a toss-up. The for sure losses for me at Bama and LSU. And the question that you are probably thinking, Mason, is why the heck do I have Georgia as a toss-up game in their schedule? I'm glad you asked, because I think if there is going to be an upset, I think the upset is Ole Miss over Georgia this year. And I really believe that because of where it falls on Georgia's schedule. We'll get into Georgia's schedule when we get there. Next week, I forgot who's doing the breakdown for them, either me and you. I don't remember. But whenever we get there, I think how the schedule lines up, I think they're in a really good position to beat Georgia at towards the beginning of November. But my prediction for Ole Miss is actually 9-3. I think they have a really solid year this year because of the offense, and I think their defense does make some jumps this year. With the losses for me, is at Alabama, LSU, and at Georgia are my three losses, actually. So I'm not calling the upset now for Georgia, but I think it's a big upset potential.
When it comes to predicting,
but when it comes to their prediction, I have them losing to those three and winning all of their question mark games except Georgia. So that means they beat Auburn at Auburn, they beat Tulane, they beat Mississippi State, and they beat A&M. If you didn't notice, I didn't have Arkansas as a toss-up game. I think they run Arkansas out the water. So I have them going 9-3, which means I actually have them third in the West, finishing third in the West. So with that, we'll go ahead and give our order of finish for the SEC West, and then we'll have kind of our last bit of discussion on these teams in the West on what we want to talk about when it comes to Jimbo, Mississippi State, all that kind of fun stuff. So Mason, why don't you go ahead and give me your order of finish first?
All right. So I'm going with Bama, number one, LSU at two, Ole Miss at three, A&M at four, Mississippi State at five, Arkansas at Auburn at six, Arkansas at seven.
Okay. Our first three are different, only at the top, though. I have LSU one, obviously. LSU at one, Bama two. I also have Ole Miss at three. I did a swap as we were talking about Auburn because I originally had Auburn at 4 in the West. I actually did. I have them that sneaking. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. But after kind of talking about them and looking at their schedule again, I decided to move them down. So I put Texas A&M, unfortunately, at 4. And then I have Auburn at 5. I have Arkansas at 6. And I have Mississippi State finishing last at 7. Kind of like you said, let's start with the Mississippi State angle there. Now that we've done our order of finishes and done our full preview of each team, let's kind of get into a broader discussion here. Let's start with Mississippi State. As I mentioned, whenever you get done, Mississippi State is going to be an impossible team to figure out before the season because you don't know how these kids are going to react to with the Leach news of him passing away, with a new coaching staff, basically brand new coaching staff. It seems Zach Arnett is now the head coach. He was the defensive coordinator, but it's completely different being a first-time head coach when no one was really looking for him to be a head coach. So it wasn't like he was an up-and-comer. He was an up-and-comer defensive coordinator, but he wasn't one to be for a head coaching job. Nobody really thought he was ready. Mississippi State was just in such a bind, they just, you know, promoted him anyway. So how are they going to respond to that? How is the new coaching staff going to be? And the reason for all, like the reason I have them at 7th and finishing last is because of those. First time head coach that I don't know is necessarily ready. You have a super senior team, but you have a brand new offense you're going to have to do. It's just too many questions for me to pick you better than last in the league at this point.
Yeah, I think the good news for them, though, is that he was their defensive coordinator last year, and he got promoted to head coach. So, like, there should be a little bit of fluency on the defense, I believe, because, like you said, it's not like he went anywhere. He's still there. He's still going to be very hands-on with the defense. And, like, much like their offense, they have a ton of seniors and juniors on that end of the ball, too. So, like, surprisingly enough, coming from Mike Leach, going to Arnett, like defense will be their strength next year. So to me, like, I think if you can just count on Will Rogers to keep you in the right situations and not turn the ball over too much, then like you're going to put yourself in games, in some of these questionable games, and you're going to be able to win some of them and pull some of them out. But it's like, it to me, it all falls on Will Rogers. Like if he can be equal to or a little bit less than what he was numbers wise for the past couple of years, they're going to be in good shape. But that's kind of where it starts getting a little shaky. If he can handle a more balanced offense than just the air raid.
Yeah, I mean, I think it also comes to the offensive line, too. Can they handle being something other than an air raid? And I think they won a lot of games last year. I mean, they went, before the bowl game, they went 8-4 last year. And a good bit of those games, one of those was to come back against Auburn, I think. And so you don't win that game without Mike Leach. And I think there's probably two games this year that's going to be the case. And so that's why I have them 7th. Let's go to your favorite topic, Texas A&M. Jimbo, obviously you heard my prediction. I think they go 7-5. And they go on a stretch. In my prediction, they go on a stretch of 3 consecutive losses in October. They don't win a game in October, basically, is how I have it.
Fire.
Does he make it to November?
No way. Nope. We're going to see old Bobby P back on the head coaching spot. They'll be back. I hope.
Do you think they go 7-5, or do you think they go a little bit better than what I'm predicting?
I think they're going to be right around that. 7-5 is probably a good number. 8-4 seems a little too much for them. I just hope that Bobby Petrino comes out one day, neck brace on, just to troll people. That would be great. Okay. If he just comes out in a press conference with the neck brace on, great. Top tier content right there. But no, I don't think Jimbo makes it through the season at all. I've been saying that for a while now too. So I just don't.
So after which, so when does he get fired then? After what game? Does he get fired after losing to South Carolina?
Let me pull.
Or does he get fired after losing back-to-back Alabama, Tennessee?
Okay, so I think, gosh. So South Carolina is before Alabama, Tennessee?
South Carolina is after those two. So it goes Bama, at Tennessee, South Carolina.
Okay. I think if they,
those are their only October games. They have a bye week in between Tennessee and South Carolina.
And then they've got Auburn week four. So I think if they lose to Auburn week four and then drop both Bama and Tennessee, I think he gets fired. I also think that if they just drop Bama and Tennessee in the first place and they look a little shaky in the first couple weeks, I think he gets fired. But let's say they look awesome first 4 weeks, lose to Bama, Tennessee, lose to South Carolina. I think he gets fired after South Carolina.
So yeah, you think no way he makes it to November?
I don't
play Ole Miss.
I don't think there's a chance. No way.
Yeah. I mean,
he's already got so much hate right now. And so much his seat is as hot as it can be. Like, I don't think he could get any hotter. He basically has no room for error right now. And knowing Jimbo, he's going to make a couple errors. So, old buddy's going to get fired.
Yeah. I mean, and records aside, I mean, just going over the stuff that I read you from The Athletic on their roster turnover, I mean, that's reason enough.
Yeah.
That's reason enough. And, here's the thing, Mason. We're talking about how we're so excited and so giddy about Jimbo getting fired. That just means they have the chance of getting it right, man. That's the thing I don't want is this school getting it right. And so we run the risk. I mean, listen, it's a 75-25 chance. 75 that you mess it up, 25 that you get it right chance when it comes to hiring a coach.
Look, I like those
but
eyes.
It's still 25%. He's obviously not going to get Brian Kelly, but what's the equivalent of a Brian Kelly for an A&M? I mean, we can get to that conversation in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe when we're talking national. On who could be potential candidates for new jobs after a good season, but that's the only thing that for you and me we could hate is that, oh man, I wish Jimbo was still there, that way they were just always mediocre. But then you also got to think, hey, this is Texas A&M, Jimbo or not, they've always been mediocre. So you know what, we have that going for us.
Yeah, but let's be real, they're going to fire Jimbo halfway through the season, and then they're going to promote Bobby Petrino to the interim head coach. Like, come on. It can't get any better than that. Like, that's a dream right there.
Oh, man. Okay, so we got the Jimbo out of our system. Let's talk just a little bit about Arkansas. I mean, you heard me just destroy them, basically. What are your thoughts on the whole Arkansas situation?
Five
and seven is what I got them.
I completely agree. Last year I was overhyped on them, and it was more because of the pieces that they had returning last year and the couple of additions that they made through the transfer portal. And of course, you lose Drew Sanders, you lose Hazelwood out of your wide receiver room. It's a downhill slope for me right now. I'm not quite ready to say that Pittman's coaching for his job. So I'm hesitant to, I'm going to hold off on that one. But like you said, like KJ Jefferson could be the best quarterback in the SEC, could not. Rocket Sanders, probably the best running back in the SEC. Either him or Judkins. But like when you have two guys like that, and normally Arkansas has a decent offensive line, you're going to be able to put yourself in games. I just don't think they're going to have the talent this year to be able to pull most or any close game off this year.
I mean, if he doesn't get fired, he's in Jimbo's position next year.
Correct. Yes. No, I agree with that. If he does, if they do have a bad season, he'll definitely be on the hot seat. But I don't think he'll get fired after this season.
Let's talk a little bit about Auburn, and then we'll wrap it up. I think they're kind of similar to Mississippi State. The thing about Auburn is the transfers. How are the transfers going to fit in, and how are they going to work? I mean, LSU took in a ton of transfers last year, and they won the West. But I think the difference is that LSU had way better players that stayed than what Auburn has. So that's kind of the thing you have. Kind of the thing that I talked about with the whole Mike Leach situation with Mississippi State is, hey, you're Auburn, you have Hugh Freeze. Hugh Freeze can win you a couple games. And I think he'll do that. That's why I was really high and originally had them fourth and then downgrading them to fifth and not last. is I just think he's such a good coach that he'll win them a couple of games that they shouldn't. Which games, I don't know, but I think there will be one or two that he'll win just based off his coaching acumen. One of those obviously being Arkansas to me. I think they'll beat State. And then you have a toss-up. Okay, which one are you going to beat? Are you going to beat A&M or are you going to beat Ole Miss? I think you're more likely to beat A&M. But, I mean, when you had to play Georgia and you had to play Alabama and you had to play LSU on the same year, it just makes the numbers not work well in your favor. So
yeah, no, 100%. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our West preview. You have any final thoughts on anything else that we discussed tonight, whether you want to jump back to the beginning of the episode and talk expansion playoff or anything else about the West teams?
No, that's it. You squeezed me dry.
Squeeze you dry. All right, guys. Well, thank you again so much for hanging out with us and listening. We will be doing our SEC East lookout and preview next week, so be on the lookout for that. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your day, great rest of your time, and we'll see y'all next week.